The U.S. Supreme Court hears a campaign finance case today involving whether Congress may limit political parties' hard money. That's the money given to the party in small, regulated contributions, which may be spent on candidate advertising. NPR legal affairs correspondent Nina Totenberg reports.
There's a language to the subject of campaign finance, and it's a language that matters a lot. In 1974, when Congress passed the post-Watergate reforms, it limited both campaign contributions and expenditures. The Supreme Court upheld contribution limits, saying they were aimed directly at preventing corruption of the political process. But the court said spending could not be limited. That was free speech, and it could only be limited as a quid pro quo. For example, if a candidate accepts federal funding for his presidential campaign, he cannot spend any more money. That sounds relatively simple when you're talking about candidates, but what about parties? The Federal Election Commission has always deemed spending by parties in conjunction with candidates to be a contribution. The reasoning goes this way. There are limits on what an individual can contribute, $20,000 to a party and $1,000 to a candidate. And if an individual maxes out in his $1,000 contribution to a candidate, he should not be able to evade that limit by giving a separate $20,000 to the party if the party is to serve as nothing more than a conduit to funnel the money to the candidate for coordinated expenditures. That rule went unchallenged until 1986, when the Colorado Republican Party spent heavily on a U.S. Senate race and was cited for violating the law by the Federal Election Commission. 10 years later, the GOP won a partial victory when the Supreme Court ruled that a party can spend all the money it wants in specific campaigns if it does so independent of the candidate, without consulting him. Left unresolved was whether the party could coordinate party expenditures with the candidate, and that is the question before the Supreme Court today. It could be very important, especially if Senators McCain and Feingold succeed in outlawing the raising and spending of soft money. Fred Wertheimer is president of a pro-reform organization called Democracy 21.
Once you get rid of that soft money system, which is drowning everything, then you're back to something which is a significant problem. After all, I can give $20,000 a year to a party in a six-year period, which is a Senate election cycle. I could give $120,000 legally to a party over 6 years. That's one thing if it's going to the party. It's quite another thing and a big problem if that whole $120,000 is simply being laundered through the party to a Senate candidate, because at that point, you have $120,000 worth of influence directly going to a Senate candidate.
And, he says, Congress's whole purpose in enacting the campaign finance law was to prevent individuals from being able to buy influence with federal officeholders by giving large amounts of money. But Jan Barron, representing the Republican Party in the Supreme Court today, will tell the justices that that argument just won't wash.
That whole justification falls apart when you're looking at a political party. The whole point of candidates being with political parties is that they actually share each other's concerns and political agenda.
Parties, he argues, are unlike one-issue interest groups. They are coalitions. He notes that right now the only way parties can spend their money for a candidate's campaign is without coordinating with the candidate, which he asserts can often be counterproductive.
That, in fact, occurred in 1996 when one of the Republican Party committees attempted an independent expenditure in the state of Wyoming on some issue. And much to their embarrassment, they subsequently discovered that it was an issue that their candidate actually supported, where the party took an opposite position. And that makes no sense.
Yes, he concedes, the Founding Fathers looked with great disfavor on political parties, but they looked with even greater suspicion on the government, which is why they passed the Bill of Rights barring the government from interfering with free speech.
When the government decides to pass a law against anybody and says, we want to limit your speech, they have to have a justification for that. No one is really genuinely concerned with political parties corrupting their own candidates by spending this money.
I would say that our opponents maybe have not heard of Mark Rich and his recent pardon.
Campaign finance reformer Wertheimer concedes that the money given to the Democratic Party by Denise Rich was in large part soft money that could be outlawed by Senator McCain's bill. But he adds,
if our opponents want to argue that huge soft money amounts maybe are being given to and through the parties to buy influence, But hard money amounts won't be, even though those amounts could be $120,000 over a Senate election cycle. I just think that that defies logic.
Roger Witten, who filed a brief in the case for the self-described Citizens Lobby Common Cause, argues that Congress, when it imposed the 1974 restrictions on party money, saw party contributions as a way of getting around limits on individual contributions.
The problem is that private moneyed interests with high-stakes issues pending before the government see the parties as a way of getting to candidates. And our thesis is that the candidate in that situation is just as beholden to the contributor as if the contributor had given the candidate the money directly.
Money in this situation, he argues, is not free speech. After all, the parties can spend any amount they want as long as they don't coordinate with the candidates. Moreover, he says, the number of TV and radio commercials shows there is no dearth of cash for the parties to use in getting their message out.
To the contrary, we've all been complaining that there are too many darn commercials on TV through election season.
Indeed, he notes, in the last election, the two parties together raised and spent $750 million in so-called hard money, that is, in regulated small contributions as opposed to unlimited, unregulated soft money. But Jan Barron contends that's not enough.
I would just point out that the annual gross revenues of one media company, the Washington Post Company, is over $2 billion. That is the cost of communicating in our society. For political parties and political participants, it is a fact of life that reaching millions of voters who are busy and are not particularly attentive to political messages is a costly and complicated process, and it's going to cost a lot of money.
When the advocates stand to make their arguments in the Supreme Court today, they will know one important thing, that only one member of the court, Justice Sandra Day O'Connor, has ever been closely involved in electoral politics or had to raise money. Early in her career, she served as Republican leader of the Arizona State Legislature, and she could well be the deciding vote in this case. Nina Totenberg, NPR News, Washington.